Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is a special July 4th edition of KNX In Depth. I'm Mike Simpson.
And I'm Charles Feldman. We are going to bring you conversations with three people who have been the driving forces behind major stories in this first half of 2020. And yes, sadly, we're only halfway through this very grueling year.
This year has been 72 years long.
Yeah, it's just gone on forever. From a pandemic to a nationwide racial justice movement to a bitterly contested presidential election. These are the stories that have shaped our lives during these past 6 months, and we are going to get into all of it on this special edition of In Depth.
We will hear from Martin Luther King III, son of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., about how activists, political leaders, everyday Americans can seize the moment, stamp out systemic racism in the wake of George Floyd's death. We'll talk with Mark Cuban, billionaire owner of the Dallas Mavericks, on how to pull this country out of its deep economic hole brought on by the coronavirus pandemic. And we'll start with someone who's going to figure quite prominently in the upcoming election.
That man is ambassador and former national security advisor to President Trump, John Bolton. His new book is The Room Where It Happened, which tells the story of his time serving in the Trump administration and his up close and personal views of the president himself. John Bolton, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Let me start off in a weird sort of way. Back in the late 70s, there was a feud between the late novelist Mary McCarthy and the playwright Lillian Hellman. And McCarthy was famously quoted as saying of Hellman, "Every word she writes is a lie, including and the." Is that the case with President Trump in your view? Is every word he says, including and the, not true?
Well, I'd never heard that story before, but that's a keeper, I would have to say. No, not everything he says is untrue, but his definition of truth is variable. And I think that's a problem. I think it's not just the salesman, you know, telling you that the used car is really better than it looks, which is how some people justify it. I think it's a kind of reality problem. I think he hopes to shape reality the way he wants it by talking about it in ways that are not necessarily consistent with the truth. That's deeply ingrained in his personality, and he's not going to change. Anyone who approaches him and thinks they can reform him or change him, I think, is badly mistaken.
And is there just an unwillingness to learn or to change the worldview? And what are the implications of that when you're the most powerful man in the world?
Well, look, no president comes to the office with 360-degree knowledge of every single issue they're going to have to face. There's no doubt about it. Everybody brings their own experience. What's key, though, is the willingness to learn about things that, you know, were not part of your experience before you joined the government. And in Donald Trump's case, since he had never been in the government before, there was a lot to learn. I'm not going to comment on the domestic side, because being a businessman gives you a perspective even if you haven't been in government. But, you know, not a lot of people sit around the dinner table talking about strategic arms reduction talks with Russia. So if you want to get into that, it'd be helpful to know what's at stake, what the different sides think, what the experience has been, what the history has been. And it just is something that President Trump's not interested in, and not interested in a lot of other issues in the foreign and defense policy field. I worry about that because I don't believe that somebody can make fully informed decisions on matters of enormous significance without really knowing more about the subject matter than he does.
I worked for a couple of years in the UN as a correspondent, so I know that the diplomats are very artful at sometimes not answering a question. I'm going to try it anyway, though. There are people, and you know that, and I know you've been asked this. Why didn't you at some point, because of the observations you had up close and personal with Mr. Trump, why didn't you just sort of say, you know what, I'm out of here. This isn't working. This guy is just not taking the advice, or whatever rationale you would have had at the time. Why not do that?
Well, in effect, that's what I did on September the 10th of last year. I did resign over a variety of things. You know, people ask, what was the straw that broke the camel's back? And to me, it was the Afghan peace negotiations with the Taliban and the president saying he wanted to bring the Taliban to Camp David until he changed his mind and decided that he didn't. But it's not just that alone. It's obviously the accumulation of things. It's like one more rock in the bottom of the boat. I've been criticized, along the lines you suggest, of people saying you should have resigned much earlier, after 30 days or 60 days, or pick your event. After you realized how bad it was. I've been criticized in the other direction by people who said you had a duty to stay on, in effect, I suppose, till the end of the first term, because of what you could have contributed. There's a big alumni association of former advisors to President Trump. Some stayed until they resigned. Some were fired. They all went through the kind of personal agony of trying to reconcile, trying to do the right thing for the country with dealing with President Trump. Each of them made his or her own decision. I don't criticize any of them. And I think I understand why outsiders make that point. But, you know, honestly, until you've walked in our shoes, I don't think you have the full sense of what it's like.
The alleged Russian bounties, which he calls a hoax today, you told CBS that you would have done things differently. You would have briefed. And the AP says that you actually told people that, yes, you indeed did brief him. So did you? And if you're going to say, no, I can't tell you, can educated people make the jump? There's not that much room between those two statements.
Well, you know, I said no comment on this report about something that supposedly happened back in early 2019, which is well more than a year ago. A lot happens in a year. There may be new facts out there. I do think that people should understand, though, that the way the White House has tried to explain this is too simplistic. The idea that, well, you only go to the president with verified intelligence, and if it's unverified, you don't tell him about it. It's much more complicated. Life is more complicated than that. Intelligence operates along a spectrum of uncertainties. So does life in your business world. The reason I would have gone to the president, at least to say, look, Mr. President, we're still looking into this, but I want to give you a heads up about what the Russians are up to. You know, you're talking about a nuclear weapons power paying bribes to a terrorist group to kill American service members, and it was deemed sufficiently significant. The administration has said that we passed it on to our coalition partners in Afghanistan so that that they could take the same kind of force protection measures that presumably our people were taking. I just worry that the overall administration reaction is the same confused and uncertain response we've seen in too many circumstances, and it reflects a presidential effort to get himself away from a complex situation, let others take responsibility. They didn't tell me, so it's therefore not on my watch.
Of course, we're in the middle, as we all know, of this horrible pandemic. Do you think the traits that the president has, or in your view perhaps doesn't have, has contributed to the dilemma that this country now finds itself in?
Yes, I do. I think it's clear, reported in multiple media, that in early January of this year, the responsible staff on the National Security Council, at the Centers for Disease Control, and other places were raising red flags about what was happening in China. The problem was not that they didn't get what was happening. It's that there was an empty chair in the Oval Office. The president didn't want to hear bad things about Chinese leader Xi Jinping. He didn't want to hear about the cover-up, the disinformation, the deception that the Chinese were engaged in to minimize the actual effect of the coronavirus inside China. He didn't want to hear about negative impact on the Chinese economy that might disrupt the trade negotiations. And he particularly didn't want to hear the risk of what we've seen since then and the disastrous effect it's had on our economy, which he saw as hurting his chances for re-election. So I think while some steps were taken in February and March, I think not getting the country ready and not spinning up the government at full speed to anticipate what might come cost us valuable time that has had the obvious impact of not having adequate preparation.
Got an election coming up. Long list of powers that are going to try to meddle in it, do you think?
There's no question about it. I think Russia, China, perhaps Iran, North Korea. I'm proud of many of the steps that were taken in the administration to strengthen our defenses in cyberspace in particular. I write about that in the book. Vice President Pence gave a speech over a year ago now talking about Chinese efforts not simply to interfere with the election, but really to affect the entire political discourse of this country, far broader than anything envisaged in 2016. I think Americans ought to be concerned about this because I think our adversaries do think they can destabilize us. It's not a simplistic favoring one candidate over the other. It's undermining the legitimacy of America's institutions and our Constitution, sowing distrust among the American people. And sadly, I think they've had a lot of success. So I think we need to guard against it. I view it, and I said before I joined the administration, what Russia did in 2016 was an attack on the Constitution.
Last question for you, and we'll let you go, John. Have you come to a conclusion on why the president seems to be, or at least has been accused by many critics, of being particularly soft when it comes to Russia and particularly when it comes to President Putin? Have you formed your own opinion on why that is the case?
Well, I can't explain it, except I'm not sure it's worse in the case of Putin than it is for Xi Jinping or Kim Jong-un or Erdogan of Turkey or others. I think the president himself has commented many times on his fascination with authoritarian leaders. Who would have expected it? Maybe nobody other than him. I'm not a shrink. I can't see inside his head. But I think it's disturbing because I think it opens a vulnerability to precisely the leaders of our principal adversaries to take advantage of the president. And that's obviously potentially damaging to the U.S.
Ambassador, thank you.